This is The Guardian.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
I have goosebumps everywhere. Everybody's starting to cheer. I might cry. I kind of feel like crying.
This is so cool.
Yesterday, a strip of Mexico, then Texas through Illinois and Ohio to Maine, and finally a section of Newfoundland, were all plunged into darkness.
We're at total eclipse. Boy, it has really, really gotten dark here. Some fireworks are starting to go off on the other side of the lake.
But as millions of people gazed up in wonder, scientists got to work.
We are observing the corona to try to find clues as to how it can be so hot, and also other things such as how large solar storms evolve and are created.
The solar eclipse was special. Not only was the totality, where the moon totally blocks the sun's light, visible during the day from accessible land, it also lasted for 4 minutes, giving solar scientists, atmospheric researchers, and even biologists a rare opportunity to ask some interesting questions.
When bonobos get anxious or when there's tension in the group, they actually have sexual behavior, including homosexual behavior. And so if the eclipse somehow triggers anxiety in animals, then it'll be interesting to see if they mitigate it in that peculiar way that bonobos tends to do.
So today we're finding out why this celestial event was so exciting for scientists and what they're hoping to discover. From The Guardian, I'm Madeline Finlay. And this is Science Weekly. I caught up with Professor Hugh Morgan, who leads the Solar System Physics Group at Aberystwyth University, before the eclipse. His team are investigating a long-standing puzzle about the sun's atmosphere, or the corona. So, what's the mystery?
The corona holds several mysteries, actually, and one of them is, why is it so hot? So it's a plasma which is at 1 million degrees or even 2 or 3 million degrees. It's permeated by the strong magnetic field coming out from the sun. So it's a very alien, extreme environment which is impossible to recreate here on Earth. The corona is very faint. In fact, it's several million or even a billion times fainter than the sun itself. So during an eclipse, we can very clearly and actually quite importantly cheaply observe the corona from Earth with great clarity.
And just to emphasise how puzzling this question is, the corona is actually a few hundred times hotter than the visible surface of the sun, which is totally counterintuitive because things normally get cooler the further you are away from the source of heat. And so is this a good chance to work out what's going on?
Yes, it's true. This eclipse is a really unique opportunity. Eclipses are excellent to observe the corona. This is information we can't get otherwise, so it's really valuable. What's nerve-wracking is the months of preparation, logistics, and the costs, all hinging on this 4 minutes of eclipse totality, and also hinging on completely on the weather. So it is quite nerve-wracking experience.
While the studies Hugh and his team were doing, which we're going to find out about later, depended on the weather, there were ways to avoid that problem. NASA flew up high-altitude planes, chasing the totality and taking measurements of the solar corona as they raced above the Earth. But it wasn't just the sun's atmosphere scientists were looking at. More than 70 different institutions across the US flew balloons up to explore how the Earth's atmosphere responded to the rapid change from light to dark and back again. And on the ground, amateur radio operators were checking how their signals changed as the sun's disappearance affected the ionosphere, an electrically charged part of the atmosphere critical for radio communications. But while lots of scientists depend on eclipses to uncover certain mysteries, others have found themselves surprised by their utility.
I didn't think that eclipses were going to be interesting at all. I'm a biologist. I'm not super into like what's happening with the moon and the sun. And in fact, I was kind of reluctant to do a study, but we started getting a lot of interest from people calling in and asking us, what do animals do during eclipses?
That's Adam Hartstone Rose, a professor of biological sciences at NC State University, who, during an eclipse in 2017, reluctantly set out to answer that question.
And I'm proud to say that I was completely wrong on both counts. The eclipse was mind-blowing and the animals had really strong reactions. And now I'm basically hooked to it. I'm an eclipse chaser, I think, maybe for life now.
So tell me about that 2017 study then. Did you have people sort of posted around the zoo watching what was happening and taking notes?
That's exactly what we did. I trained a group of about 40 researchers. Some of them were students, some were zookeepers, some were volunteers. And I positioned them all over the zoo at different enclosures. And we watched not just during the day of the eclipse, but we watched for the couple days preceding the eclipse to get an idea of the normal behavior of those species and those particular animals. And then we watched during the eclipse and amazing things happened.
So tell me about some of those amazing things. What were the animals doing?
The animals did great stuff. So we categorized all of the behaviors into four different categories. The first category, about a quarter of the animals didn't do anything at all, which was actually amazing in and of itself because the zoo was bonkers that day. Like people were so excited and some of the animals were aggressively disinterested in what was happening during the eclipse. My favorite example is there were some hilarious grizzly bears that during like regular times, they're super engaged animals. They would, you know, interact with the children at the glass. And during the eclipse, they were not quite passed out, but they were pretty much asleep. They just sort of rolled their heads around during the peak of the eclipse just to let us know that it wasn't that they were so asleep that they couldn't have done anything. They just didn't feel like doing anything. But three quarters of the animals had a notable response to the eclipse. The majority of those were related to what we call circadian behaviors. So basically animals that behave as if the evening had come and it became nighttime. And then when the eclipse was over, then they went back to their regular behavior.
So what were the other two groups then? What were they up to?
Another large group of animals, unfortunately, had a response that we regard as related to anxiety, like the giraffes galloping around their enclosure. That was one that was kind of upsetting. Another kind of endearing example that we interpreted as an anxiety response is what happened with the flamingos. During totality and as totality built, all of the adult flamingos in the flock gathered the chicks and the subadults towards the middle of the flock as if to protect them. And then the adults started looking around the sky. They didn't look towards the sun, but they looked around the sky as if they were being vigilant and looking out for an an aerial predator, for instance. And then there were a couple species that behaved in ways that were so weird that we just called them novel, which is basically what scientists say when we have no like explanation collectively for what we're observing.
Tell me about those novel behaviors then.
Yeah, the novel behaviors were fascinating. The first species that had really interesting behaviors were these little apes called siamangs. These are beautiful black apes. They're a kind of a gibbon, and they're famous for making these amazingly loud vocalizations that can be heard for miles around. And we recorded them before the eclipse, and we actually went back and recorded the vocalizations for a few weeks after the eclipse, because the vocalization pattern that we heard during the eclipse was so different than any vocalization pattern we had heard before or since. Maybe even more interesting, though, was what happened with the Galapagos tortoises. Galapagos tortoises are ancient-looking animals that are not particularly active animals, but during the eclipse, as totality built, they became much more active. And then right at the moment of totality, they started breeding. They started mating behaviors. We have no idea if that is an actual signal that is prompted in that species, or if this was sort of a one-off observation. But we're hoping that as we have more opportunities for eclipses, we're going to be watching more and more tortoise species to find out.
Since your 2017 study, there will have been other eclipses around the world. I wonder if people have been in touch with you to tell you about their own observations of how animals were behaving.
Yes, and it's been so exciting. I've heard crazy stuff. One person contacted me to tell me that during the peak of totality, there was a snake in the middle of his mom's kitchen, and then there's never been a snake there before or since. I was contacted by two separate scientists, one a NASA scientist and another a geologist. And the NASA scientist was in the Caribbean during the peak of totality during an eclipse and observed a whole pod of dolphins come to the surface and look around the sky. And then last week, another scientist, this geologist who is working near Galapagos, also on a boat in the Pacific Ocean this time, he said that dozens of dolphins and whales rose to the surface during totality and then went right back under. And so there is this sort of collective knowledge, and some of it sounds wildly unbelievable. But as we get more and more feedback about what people hear and see, we're starting to really understand these things.
I can tell that there's a real curiosity about this, but what can studying it really tell you about the animals? You know, in a way, why are you doing this?
It's a question I get asked all the time. I pride myself on studying things that essentially have no significance in human lives, but are fascinating. But there is value in this madness. First of all, there's kind of a small answer about why understanding this eclipse behavior is important. We don't want our animals to be upset, and understanding that will help us potentially mitigate those negative reactions. But the real reason that this is important is because this is an inspirational event. Eclipses are powerful and wonderful, and combine that amazing event with our fascination of animal behavior and always trying to figure out what do animals think about. You know, anybody who has a dog or a cat thinks, at least on a weekly basis, maybe on a daily basis, what is going through your mind? And this is answering that to some extent. What's going through the minds, not just of your dog or cat, but what's going through the mind of a gorilla or a giraffe? For most of us, this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. For essentially all animals, it's once-in-a-lifetime. Eclipses happen only in any given spot every 375 years. So nobody's going to relive the exact same experience, but it still gives us this opportunity to have this collective understanding of the natural world.
I spoke to Adam and Hugh before the eclipse, but afterwards, we got an update from them both.
This is Professor Hugh Morgan from Aberystwyth University. I'm glad to say that the teams in the US observing the eclipse had considerable success. Our team in Paris, Texas had completely clear skies, surprisingly. Everyone's really excited. We feel so lucky to have observed the eclipse today, given the cloudy weather conditions. And it's all thanks to the hard work and dedication of the team. I'm so happy and really looking forward to looking at the data and analyzing.
This is Adam Hartstone-Rose coming to you from the Fort Worth Zoo.
And it was an extraordinary day at the zoo. A lot of the animals, in fact, almost all of the animals that we watched, behaved as if it had become evening. And so they went to their enclosures where they're usually put in for the night, often where they get their meal in the evening. A bunch of the animals seemed a little bit confused why they weren't allowed into their indoor spaces. Three species of owls woke up and started flying around during totality. So it turns out eclipses, most of the time, animals think that the evening has come very rapidly, maybe confusingly so, but then everybody seemed to return to normal pretty quickly.
Hugh, we've heard about your study looking at the sun's too hot corona, which sounds really interesting. And by now, Adam will have discovered whether or not eclipses consistently make Galapagos tortoises horny. There's obviously a lot that can be learned. So when's the next total eclipse?
The next eclipse will be in August 2026, and it starts in Greenland, passes Iceland, but it will pass across North Spain and the Basque Country. After that, in August 2027, there's an especially long eclipse which lasts over 6 minutes, and that will pass through the south of Spain, Gibraltar, and North Africa, Morocco. That's a really special one just because of its length, and also it will pass through a region of Earth that hopefully will have very clear skies at that time of year.
Hugh, not to be selfish, but when's the next one going to be over the UK?
Unfortunately, we're going to have to wait till 2090 for the next total eclipse in the UK. Also, that eclipse will happen near sunset, so it won't be as amazing as when it happens near midday. The 2026 total eclipse passes quite close to the UK, but we won't see totality. But the sun will be 96% blocked off. So that will be quite an amazing experience, but not quite totality. We won't be able to observe the corona. It has to be 100% total eclipse for that. So bad news, I'm afraid.
Yes, not to reveal how old I am, but I'm not sure I'll be making it to 2090.
No, neither will I.
And so, do you think we're going to get some discoveries from this eclipse that could come out in the next, say, months or even years?
Yes. I haven't seen such an eclipse with such a broad range of experiments and so many people involved. So who knows, it could lead to really exciting discoveries, not just about the solar atmosphere, but also the response of Earth's atmosphere, and also the response of people and animals to the eclipse. Very exciting.
A big thanks to Professors Hugh Morgan and Adam Hartstone-Rose. And that's it for today. This episode was produced by me, Madeline Finley, and Josh Anchana. The sound design was by Tony Onochuku, and the executive producer is Ellie Bury. We'll be back on Thursday. See you then.
This is The Guardian.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.